This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by the Frog Pants Patreon at patreon.com/frogpants. It's a great way to support shows on the network, including Current Geek. Just go to patreon.com/frogpants today. Listen, there's a little Tony Soprano in all of us, all right?
I have
Current Geek!
Current Geek!
Whoa! Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world, and you, to keep you current on all the things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That's Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom. Hello, Tom. Tom Merritt.
Hi.
Hi.
My audio went out when I hit the gavel.
Did it really?
Yeah.
That's
so
awesome.
I was gonna sit, that's why I was looking like, is it going to come back?
Ah, your fancy little
note
thing.
To self, don't hit the mixer.
Yeah, bitch in the ass right there is what it did.
It sure did. Hey, call me Brian.
Oh, hi. Good. I will, because it'll be easier to understand who the hell's talking at any given time.
Mind if I call you Brian?
Yeah, be all right.
Just to keep things clear.
That's lovely. Hey, we're back, and it's another show, and we have guests, as we often, and well, when I say often, I mean we always do. I'm pretty excited, though.
It's true that we often do.
Well, that's true also. I guess either way, it's true. But before we tell you who they are, I'm really excited about this prospect, which, you know, assuming all the schedules line up, it should happen. We're going to have, let's just tease it as a potential thing and then people can figure it out. We have somebody who starred pretty prominently in Stargate Atlantis joining us in November. I'll let you guys
figure it out.
You
already said his name on Twitter.
Did I?
Is this a ploy to get people to follow you on Twitter?
I'm just good at pulling stuff. I'm good at pulling the Johnson, as you know.
You're trying to pull a Johnson.
I kind of am. But for those who haven't seen it on Twitter.
Watched Johnson never pulls. Don't you know that old saying?
That's right. Figure it out. If you figure it out by next week, go back, read the tweets, then maybe you'll win a prize. Probably not, but you might. It's good to be back. Our guests this week begin with one man. You know him, you love him. He's my co-host on the morning stream and the host of the 10-year-old music podcast that wins awards every year, The Coverville Show. It's Brian Dubbitt. It's Brian Ibbitt, everybody.
Thanks a lot.
Hey, Brian
How
Dubbitt.
How long have we been doing this?
I know this guy. I love him like a son. It's Birdman Dubbitt.
Yeah, thanks for having me on Current Sack. Oh, this is great.
No problem.
I love being on Current Sack.
That's all right. It's the Instances Current Sack spinoff here at Toad Pants Incorporated. It's good to have you, man. Thanks for coming back on.
Oh, dude, my pleasure.
By the way, right? Didn't we determine this ties you with Patrick?
No,
Bejean?
I thought this puts me ahead of Patrick.
It's not a competition.
One ahead,
gentlemen.
You're right. You are ahead.
It's not a competition unless I'm winning, and then it's a competition. Or unless I'm losing, and then it's a competition.
Yeah, well, right now you're winning. You're ahead. So, congrats on that, and thank you for being here. Also with us,
my pleasure.
Another Brian. You know him, and you love him. He's been around forever. Originally, did Extra Life Radio with me. The Final Score. He does comics coast to coast.
That show, right?
That's right. I did.
Not even around anymore.
Part of course, Film Sack with Brian and I and Randy Jordan. It is none other than Mr. Brian Dunaway. Hello, Brian.
Hi, how's it going? Brian Dibbitt here.
Yeah, Brian Dibbitt. Should probably get your pictures up. There you go. Hey,
do you feel like
you
have to have an intro to talk about a movie?
I felt a little bit of pressure with this. Right.
Yeah.
Well, this week's movie, Jean-Claude Van Damme said.
You have a nice 140-character stupid Twitter thing for the end of the show?
Totally. Sure, got you. Sure.
It's required. All right. Well, it's great to have you both here. Let's just jump right in to the top stories of the week.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, carry away.
Strongman and Homestar Runner are back!
What? Shut up. No way.
Yep. HomestarRunner.com. There's a new tune. It's called Number One Jam. It's got Homestar Runner, Coach Z, and perhaps other appearances.
It's been since 2006 or something, since... We have
anything
new? I don't
think it's been that long. Well, technically, it has been since April 1st because they did a Homestar Runner special return on April 1st.
I'm trying to see if it's listed here, and I can't find it.
And then they looked at that and said, "Hey, people actually do still care. We'll start doing more." So we've been waiting for him to come back. Mike Chapman told Rolling Stone, "We're planning on doing a Halloween cartoon, but no promises. They're not on a schedule. They're basically going to do these things as they feel like them."
You think they just made I'm trying to get my head around it, because they are kind of the epitome of what eventually would become YouTube and a platform for people to make really funny animated stuff and become kind of YouTube superstars. But these guys preceded all of that and had a huge following and some video games based on their stuff and did really, really well and sold a ton of swag. And everybody knew who Strong Bad was. They knew what this stuff was. I mean, I remember back in like 2000. Yeah, like 2000 or something. In fact, I remember being in line for one of the new Star Wars movies. I guess it would have been Attack of the Clones in 02 or something. But I remember being in line and having random people just talking about Homestar Runner. And it was like a real phenomenon. And then they just went poof. And there was never any real explanation. Nobody said what happened. Did they just make so much t-shirt money that they didn't care anymore? Like, I guess we'll never know.
They've done day jobs.
Right. Yeah. They went, they're doing Yo Gabba Gabba.
Oh, is that them?
What? Really? Yeah. That's the same guys?
Mike was a writer on Yo Gabba Gabba, and they've both been doing a little bit of stuff here and there.
I didn't know that.
So yeah, they didn't just go sit on their duffs.
Mm. All right.
No.
On their it was actually the opposite.
They got so busy with their actual day jobs that they were like, well, we'll just kind of, we're not going to close it. We're not going to cancel it. We're just going to get back to it someday. And then April 1st of this year is when they finally were able to get back to it.
All right. I'm in. Because they were always funny, and it was always the thing. The thing I liked about it was like subversive without being terrible for my children when they were younger in the early aughts. Like I could say, "Yeah, come here, everybody," and kids could gather around and watch this weird ass cartoon. But it was never there was never anything objectionable about it. Yet you still felt like you were watching something edgy and subversive and weird.
Going bad.
Yeah, that's hard to do. I think it's a real skill to do that, and they were awesome.
Scott, you know I have a problem with cartoons and animated cartoons and games with no arms.
Yeah, you're not a fan of that. Yeah. Yeah, Rayman, for example. Rayman,
you don't like the game Rayman?
I can't.
Ziggy, not a big fan of Ziggy.
No. And Homestar has no hands. He has no arms. It's a little bit disturbing.
Yeah, he's handless. Yeah, he's got no dexterous digits to use.
No.
For anything.
Everybody.
Who are you calling dexterous?
What's your take on XKCD?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Also, I hate it.
You're not a fan, huh?
Hate it.
Look, no, man, actually,
you're just a hater now. Yeah,
I am. I'm just a hater. No, I think the writing is brilliant on XKCD. And of course, I talk about this all the time on Comics Coast to Coast. We're fans, and we love it for the writing. And of course, the simplistic drawing is charming.
Can you imagine, though? Let me just, I know this isn't the story, but can you even imagine, Brian Dunaway, a version of XKCD that was a, you know, super fleshed out art style?
Well illustrated. That's actually a great idea. I think we should do a guest comic for those guys. Do something really
photorealistic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like all painterly and comic booky. And I wonder how that would go. Because I have always maintained, despite the fact that I also enjoy, you know, great ink and great color and, you know, fleshed out comics. I've always maintained that comic would be nothing without the stick figures because it's the perfect complement to its kind of humor, or at least they've established it so much that way that I can't imagine it any other way.
Actually, so, I would love to see it fleshed out, photorealistic, but it's still stick figures, right? Yeah,
that'd be all right.
So there's no eyes, there's no face. It's just like really
creepiest
super
ever.
Texture, round white heads.
Oh, I could totally do that.
Yeah, like very detailed. Right.
Make that in Blender or something.
But that'd Tom makes a point, though. It's almost like you need a surrealist approach to it for it to work. And the stick figure thing can provide that, but so can this other idea. So whatever it is, it has to be kind of that absurd. And not absurd in kind of a, haha, that's funny, kind of mad magazine kind of way. But a, like, what the hell? There's a floating head talking to me right now. Kind of way.
Kiwi Reed in the chat room says, all this week, XKCD by the great masters. This Monday, Michelangelo.
That's a brilliant idea.
That's awesome. Nice.
Thought of it here first. All right. Well, good. Good for Homestar Runner. May it live forever on the internet.
We got some movie news now. C. Castro 425 let us know about this on the subreddit. Get your ideas into the subreddit, currentgeek.reddit.com. Rovio has announced the cast for the Angry Birds movie. It includes Game of Thrones favorite Peter Dinklage, former Saturday Night Live stars Jason Sudeikis and Bill Hader, and Maya Rudolph as well. Champion of the Angry Buffoon, Danny McBride, and Josh Gad, who was the snowman in Frozen.
It's pretty brilliant.
Slated for a July 1st, 2016 release. And then, more movie news, Dunaway pointed out, this article on USA Today, Netflix has got a deal with Adam Sandler and his Happy Madison Productions company to develop and produce 4 films to exclusively appear on Netflix. Oh, wow. And then this past Monday, Netflix announced it was producing a sequel to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon with the Weinstein Company. And this will be Netflix's first original movie It will also play in select IMAX theaters, the ones that will actually talk to Netflix.
Yeah, the ones that aren't
must
pissed.
Be owned by the Weinsteins right. or Mark Cuban is my guess.
It's a great day for movies. It's a bad day for theaters.
Yeah.
See, but why AMC's is that so? That. Why is that?
I don't think
so
that's
pitted.
True.
Yeah.
I don't think so either. Why is that so pitted so heavily against each other, against movie theaters and Netflix? I'm okay. This is more like direct to video kind of stuff to me than really competing directly with the theaters. No more than Blockbuster put.
Yeah, but direct to out. See, this is, we had this thought this morning on TMS, and I think this is where my head is, and please someone disagree with me because maybe I'm dead wrong about this, but it seems
to agree with you that we had a TMS this morning.
Didn't we? Sorry, yesterday. Yesterday, PM, Thursday, my week's all jacked up. I have a dented phone, and I can't think straight. So no, for me it was or what I was going to say. What was I going to say? Oh, I think that this is different than direct to DVD or direct sort of pay per view kind of thing done away like you're sort of referring to, which is not that unheard of. There have been cases of, hey, it's in theaters. And like Snowpiercer, it's in theaters, but also you can do pay per view at home. You can rent it on iTunes or wherever you want to get it. This is different, though. This is 50 million people with a subscription for $8 a month to a service that gives them an all they can eat platform, just waiting for day one when the thing comes out.
It doesn't matter. I'm telling you, theaters are going to be here for a very long time, and the reason why is because it's two totally different experiences. And as long as, I think I've talked about this before, as long as there are kids that want to get out of their parents' house and can't go rent a hotel room, there's going to be theaters. That's
yeah,
the
but
reason,
look at this, though. Look at this.
That's the majority of the people go to.
But look at this, though. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, a sequel to that movie. I am far more likely to stay home and watch it there than I ever would to see it in the theater. Now, if you said it was the new Iron Man or a new Avengers, I'd go to the movie theater.
See, and that's the thing. That's the big difference. Like, you know, four Adam Sandler films, all right, yeah, I'll probably. If I can watch them for free and stream them, probably more likely to do it. But if it were something like a Marvel film, and let's say it was only going to be released, let's say that Kevin Feige had arranged for the next Guardians of the Galaxy film to only be released on Netflix, right. People would lose their crap. I'd be ticked off. You know,
just lost your crap, sir.
It's all over the floor.
Right, but is it, you guys something? Never saw Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
I saw the first one. I saw the theater. Yeah.
So you can watch that at home on your 50-inch television, and it'll be nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can go to freaking IMAX and see these amazing fight scenes in, like Dolby Surround with the huge IMAX. That's an entirely different experience. It's exactly what you're talking about, which is I want to see that on the big screen. Unless I'm really just not a fan of that style, which is what you guys sound like. It's okay to just see it at home. This is exactly the right thing to do, which is make this available on Netflix. Netflix pays out a ton of money to the Weinsteins. Don't make no mistake. They're going to make their money off this. And then show it in IMAX theaters as a proof that the folks who are really into this style and want to see it in its best advantage are going to go to the IMAX and pay the money.
Right.
Yeah.
And, but if I was a huge Adam Sandler fan and said, I must see every Adam Sandler film on the biggest screen I could possibly find.
No. See, you're changing the topic. Adam Sandler belongs on the Netflix. I'm not using that as an example. That's exactly where it should be. I'm saying that is totally direct to DVD.
Well, it works really well for us because we'd like to see Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon 2 on the big screen. But when they're taking these other properties that could have been on the big screen and saying, nope, it's just going to be here on next. Well, all right. Who knows? It may not have necessarily been on the big screen.
I don't feel like I ever need to see a drama or a romantic comedy on the big screen.
Right.
It's more like, well, that's the only choice I have. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And as long as they can make the same amount of money putting it out, however, that's fine. We should be able to watch it where we want, how we want.
It was almost a cord killer segment.
It almost was, just about. It was real close.
This is what we want, and we should be able to watch it where we want, how we want, on any device.
I completely agree.
Adam Sandler's going to make money on this, though?
He's going to make so much money on this.
How?
Yeah.
That's
the beauty of the Netflix model for the artist. They pay you.
Yeah,
it better do well in the theaters.
It's just money from Netflix.
Yeah. If he's going to get a huge amount of money per movie, he's going to get that money no matter what. It doesn't matter if the thing tanks or bombs because it's him and playing himself and his sister or whatever that dumb movie was. But here's the thing with Sandler. This is why AMC gets pissed,
right? It's Netflix.
It's going to do fine. But the reason AMC gets mad is because now what you're saying is Adam Sandler, who, like it or hate it, he made two movies I like. The rest are garbage, but they make money, and he's made nearly $4 billion at the box office in his career.
Right.
$4 billion in profit. Now, if a guy's that big of a moneymaker, and you're now saying, hey, even your poopy movies like Grown Ups 2, which did really well in theaters and made money, but was terrible, it didn't matter. People still went to see it in droves. Now totally. You're telling AMC, hey, we're going to take that foot traffic, those concession sales, entire thing, we're taking it out of your theater and we're putting it at home.
You guys are mixing this up. AMC doesn't give a crap about the Happy Madison Productions movies going to Netflix. They're not complaining about that. They're like, you're not bringing them us? Fine. We don't care. What they care about is Crouching Tiger, because they're trying to put that in the theaters and then they're like, no way. Yeah. We're not doing that.
Yeah. I'm not even that disappointed. I would rather watch it at home. That's Crouching Tiger to me is more laid back. I don't have to have that fan experience.
I disagree. I want to see it in the like.
But what Tom is saying is he wants to see the wires and stuff that you're not supposed to be able to see. He wants to be able to like see people every flying wire. Around. Yeah.
You know, Mark Wahlberg wants to know, as a businessman, he wants to know how Adam Sandler is going to make some money. He sounds like he's interested, even though he goes, this is a horrible idea, but he's a little bit interested. I think if Netflix had enough money, they could buy a Mark Wahlberg.
Wait, Wahlberg is anti this move?
Well, he's very interested. Nostalgic.
I think he's I think I found a better way to make money.
Right?
Hey, my mother, say hello to my mother. She's at the theaters paying to see a movie.
Yeah, she's going to see it.
She's eating popcorn, having candy. Yeah. Say hello to your mother
That's
for
right.
me.
I think I found a trans movie. All right. Anyway, we could go on for days, but I just, it is very interesting regardless.
Next one, actually. Yeah, yeah. Captain Kipper let us know that the final Saturday morning animation block on network TV in the United States aired on September 27th. The last holdout, the CW network, will now replace cartoons with live action, family friendly educational shows.
Right.
And yes, our rational minds understand that cartoons are thriving on cable or Netflix or other VOD services, but this is a big part of all of our childhood.
Oh, Dunaway, especially you, dude. You were just talking to me about doing more stuff to cover like that experience, that Saturday morning experience. How does it feel to know, first of all, that they're going to take this stuff off the air or that it already happened and you didn't know it? How do you feel about that?
That's pretty much it. I mean, until recently when I had this nostalgic bit, I realized that, kids growing up in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and even into the 90s a little ways until Nickelodeon really kind of changed that whole landscape. We were all gathered around the tube on Saturday mornings, but through the 2000s, we grew up and we all kind of stepped back. And like you said, we're doing video on demand. We're doing the cable channels and the network channels just went, and they've just died. And so I was actually surprised to look a couple of months ago and just go, wow, they're doing Spider-Man on the WB, I believe it was, and they're doing different cartoons. And I tried to get up a couple of Saturday mornings and watch, but I was just like,
It's for kids, though.
That was their last hope.
Right.
They were like, right. We get done away. This will work.
I was like, I tried. I really did. I got up. I was pouring my Captain Crunch. I really tried to get into it and just wasn't.
In unrelated news, He-Man turned 32 this week. I just wanted to point that out.
He-Man, 32
years.
He-Man's only 32? Really?
Yeah. Wow. Does that seem longer? Should be older?
Still rocking that same haircut.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I don't know, because he was already about 16 when he was when it first aired, though, right? So that would make him more like 48-ish.
That's a good point.
He's got my wife. I can finally draw.
Hey, man.
Say hello to your mother.
I held aloft my ignition key and said.
So, are you guys disappointed about the Saturday morning cartoon junkies?
Oh, yeah.
You know what?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's the end of an era. Sure.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I was up. I was watching Bugs Bunny, the block thing they had. Yeah. I was watching,
I was watching Prof Superstars and, Sigmund the Sea Monster. I remember.
You're naming all the live action stuff.
Well, no, those are the cartoon. There was some cartoons along with that too. What was the DC version of Mr. Fantastic? Plastic Man.
Oh, Plastic Man. Plastic Man. Yeah.
He was in it. Captain Caveman.
Captain Caveman.
I remember watching all that stuff.
Getting Brian all excited.
Finding the TV guide every year that had like, here's what's going to be the new lineup for the Saturday
fall
morning
preview. Did you used to tune in on Friday nights because they would have the little blips of everything that was coming out? Oh my God, I got so excited!
I would get
the TV guide and I would mark all the things that I was going to watch.
Dad was like, "What the?
That's awesome that you did that." Scott, for me, Brian, listen to that. What's this?
Rosemary, the telephone operator.
Underdog.
Henry, the mild-mannered janitor?
Could be. Number one super guy.
What is that?
Hong Fui.
Number one super dog.
For me, it was Super Friends. I was really into
that. And Super Friends.
Meanwhile,
yeah,
at the Hall of Doom. And they would just
Hall of Justice.
What was the dude? Legion of Doom.
The Legion of Doom, the little floating head.
Yeah, the Swamp Doom. They were always in the swamp, and they had
Solomon Grundy want to know if we could pick a better place to have these meetings.
This place is terrible, smelly.
It's drafty in here.
I miss it.
Like big black mantis head.
I miss it, but I also fully acknowledge we now live in a time where kids can get stuff in much more sort of disparate places. They don't have to rely on three networks to feed them. Kind of bad cartoon programming. It wasn't great. What we were getting was all we had, but, you know, in retrospect, pretty cheap, pretty lame.
It was cheap and lame. During the rise of the Saturday morning cartoons, it was all about getting that free media, which was the cartoons during the movies, mm-hmm. and they were bringing them to TV. And then they said, oh, we can do it cheaply with just this cheap animation. Then they realized the most important thing, and that was the marketing aspect of it. And then through the late 70s and all the way through the 80s, it was all about selling toys. Mm-hmm. And that's when the government tried to step in and make all that right. And of course, they really screwed it up.
The PSAs and all that stuff, those were great.
Yeah.
There's nostalgia for it, but I just think if you're a kid in 2014, you have some rad options. Oh, what's this? Oh, this is Super Friends.
In the Great Hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes.
You know who that is.
Created from the cosmic legends of the universe.
Cosmic legends.
Superman. Wonder Woman.
Who at DC now doesn't believe exists.
Oh.
Batman.
It's Batman flying up
Aquaman.
The car.
Aquaman, the best ever.
And those three junior super friends, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog.
Wait, what?
Their mission.
Wait.
That was when Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder signed their contracts.
Oh, they didn't have Gleek and the Wonder Twins?
The Wonder Twins?
Not on this one that I found.
No. Oh, weird. I forgot
Wendy, Marvin, and the Wonder Dog.
I forgot they even existed. But yeah, that stuff is great. And that was what's his name? Knight. Ted Knight doing the voice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Right. The reason I pulled this up, though, is we all have this nostalgia for it, right? Yeah. Because that was the thing. I wonder, because you could look at this as, well, Saturday morning cartoons have just moved to cable. Like all the other good television shows are on cable now, right? Mm-hmm. That's just the way of things. Kids can still watch Saturday morning cartoons. But do they? There's so many other things to do now.
A lot of them are watching YouTube, and a lot of them are getting animation on YouTube, and they're still getting that free experience. So they can tune in and see, what's that cat? Forget. Somebody's cat.
Dog?
No, it's called Somebody's Cat. I forgot the guy's name, but it's this black and white animated YouTube channel.
Simon's Cat.
Cat.
Yeah.
And beyond popular, ridiculously popular. My kids cannot stand missing an episode. Like, they freaking love it. Like, there are these weird alternatives now that are as good or better than what we were being fed back in the day. And they're getting that for free. They're getting it in weird places. They're getting it in places their friends like. So there's kind of a cool factor happening. Like, I don't think any of them are all broken up about this. I think they are all just fine. And truth be told, I'm kind of just fine because I like all these sources too. Mm-hmm. So it's a cool time, but whatever. We're past it.
You can kind of customize your viewing experience, which we couldn't do back then. We were stuck watching the timers in the middle of things. And
your customization was, which of the three channels will I watch?
Exactly. Right. And it's a whole, you know, every generation has this thing that disappears from the previous generation. Like the people gathering around the radio to listen to the latest episode of The Phantom.
Yeah.
We had our Saturday morning cartoons in our footy pajamas with our Captain Crunch in our lap. And next generation, they're going to be saying, oh, you remember when we actually had to watch network TV when they aired their programs?
Yeah. Yeah, and there's going to come a day where people are nostalgic about sitting around on a Friday afternoon, evening, listening to a podcast broadcast over the web. I mean, that will really be a thing that one day may not exist anymore because some better way to do it, and people are going to feel nostalgic about it, and I'm cool. Right. I'm cool with that. You know?
Go ahead. Go ahead, Tom.
Go ahead, Dunaway.
Okay, what I was going to say was I think the consumption is different as well, because right now my kids all have their own personal entertainment devices where they can just lay in their bed. They don't ever have to get up. Yeah. Whereas before, when we were growing up on Saturday mornings, you had to actually commandeer the TV. And it was the only time your parents slept in late and you got a chance to go in and you ruled the house.
Yeah, and you got bowls of cereal, dude. And you got your did pajamas all your and you were just a mess. It was awesome. Best time ever.
Remember how ticked off you were at Charles Kuralt on Sunday mornings because there wasn't cartoons.
He was such a dick.
You jerk.
Nerdtacular 2015.
Yeah.
Saturday morning cartoon.
Ooh. Okay, we got to talk about that. We'll talk about that. That's a good idea.
Pop-Tart cereal. Footy pajamas.
Oh my gosh.
Footy pajamas. I don't know if I can go with the footy pajamas.
Yeah, footy pajamas optional. You can wear them.
I might have to be out on that.
If I wear, if we all wear footy pajamas, do we all have to smell like waffles when we do that?
Right, exactly. Totally. Because that's because you pissed your pants.
You're not allowed to show
my underwear. Right.
Sorry, Tom. We did some DC
stuff, so now we have to balance it out with Marvel. The Jack Kirby estate and Marvel have settled their legal battle before it could go to the Supreme Court. It was going to be submitted to the Supreme Court for consideration on Monday, but Kirby's children have agreed to drop the lawsuit. They had filed 45 copyright termination notices against Marvel. Marvel argued the characters were work for hire and there was no dispute about the copyright, but a joint statement was put out reading that Marvel and the family of Jack Kirby have amicably resolved their legal disputes and are looking forward to advancing their shared goal of honoring Mr. Kirby's significant role in Marvel's history.
Right. Yeah, I wonder if that was, or did they, are they suing Marvel Disney or suing Marvel?
Just anything that Kirby had his hands on, it doesn't matter. And they've been doing it for years. This isn't the first lawsuit. We went into this pretty in-depth on Comic Dorks this week, and Scott Kurtz kind of swayed me around to a certain point of view, which is he doesn't like the simplistic view of this, which is, finally, the little guy gets his due. The man was holding him back, and Kirby gets what was his, and all of that. He thinks that's not actually accurate in terms of what they like. The people going after this money aren't in it to protect their father and grandfather's legacy. They're in it to get a bunch of money that they think is due them.
Right.
This never Jack came Kirby up will while not Jack get Kirby any of this was money. Alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's dead.
He'll stuff it in his coffin. Gadgummit.
Yeah. I mean, the idea that everybody wants to make this such a simple argument, and the truth is it's not. And there's a lot of things at play here, and who knows what money was involved, because they're never going to tell us. It was all undisclosed. And, you know,
I'm sure Marvel paid some to shut them up.
Well,
yeah, they came to an agreement. They probably threw some stuff like, we'll do a celebration of, you know, they probably used some emotional stuff to bargain them down, and then it got to a number they could agree on. But this is all about business. This has nothing to do with Jack Kirby.
Yeah, that's important to know.
Integrity or nothing.
Yeah. And if you know that, and I think if you just understand that going into it, then it becomes a much more academic issue of, all right, well, you did make a ton of money on these characters, and if Jack was here, he would, you know, contracts would be very different today. And but neither of them, you know, it's not like they were destitute. They don't talk about this, but Jack Kirby was doing fine, and so did his family, and so does Stan Lee. And everybody still says Stan Lee hasn't gotten his due. I think Stan Lee's done real good.
Oh, yeah. I'm almost tired of seeing him.
You have to think that, because he probably thought it. Well, before I die, I want to show up in a couple of these movies. Now he's going, damn it.
Yeah.
I'm still alive.
He's looking back like saying, I can't believe I missed being in X-Men First Class.
Yeah.
You think he? I don't know. Yeah.
Thanks to Hobbit from PA for submitting that story, by the way. Yeah. Dunaway submitted this next one. Science is going to save us from brewing feces in order to make great tasting coffee.
Whoa.
Who's not excited about that?
Whoa.
If you've never heard of civet coffee, it uses beans that have passed through the digestive system of a civet, which is a mammal. They are washed, but somehow during the process of going through the civet, they are made tastier. So a new company
just
called
like corn.
Affinure is trying to replicate the process of the civet's digestive tract without putting it through the civet by using bacteria to ferment the beans in a way that mimics the taste of the delicate beans.
Dunaway just almost gave away the whole secret behind Orville Redenbacher's flavored popcorn.
So is Orville Redenbacher
somewhere
digested?
It's all passed through Orville Redenbacher. Yes.
he chews all of it.
So I'm looking at a civet for the first time in my life. I'll put this in the chat room. You guys can all see this chat room as well as you guys
in
Skype.
You know what's weird? There's such a stigma about the butthole, because, you know, if you told me that you like cut the civet open and pulled it out of his colon, I might be able to drink it.
No, you wouldn't, dude.
Once it passes through the orifice of doom?
No. No way you have any different view. In fact, I would have a slightly worse view if you said, hey, how do you get it? Well, we kill the civet, we open it up and go into its colon and take this stuff out directly.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think the butthole is the problem.
Maybe the analogy you're moving towards, Brian, is nobody gives a rat's ass or a civet's ass, I guess. If they take the sweat from the civet and use it in perfumes,
which
they do.
What? Oh, dude, the civet is a multifunctional device. Yeah, no, you don't.
We're very American. Native American civet.
On purpose.
Smells like a cat's butt.
I'm attracted to you. You smell like a civet butt.
I'm all for, like, the other day I was thinking about this. I'm all for us figuring out more renewable ways to do things. I'm not saying civet coffee butt is the way to go, but, like, I, for example, am totally cool if they start mashing up. Like, a friend of mine was talking about how he's eating a lot more crickets in food, like cricket tacos and things. I'm fine with this if they can match the mashed up crickets with whatever equivalent food they're making. So if it's a burger, I want it to taste and look and be textured like a burger. If it is, then
it's
I'm
very
totally
vegetarian
cool.
Of you.
Well, yeah. It's got no fat and it's totally very high in protein. And why not?
Really? That's the whole benefit, is the extra protein?
Yeah, huge amounts of protein. But think about how renewable that is, Brian. So, like, you've got, instead of cows, which, you know, I guess we can keep making cows, but we're also really weird with the way we fill them full of hormones, and there's all kinds of issues with that. So why not take a renewable source like freaking crickets and bugs that you can make a trillion of?
This doesn't hurt the cat, though.
Right, no.
He was already doing this.
Yes,
he was already eating
the beans
these.
And defecating.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
This is stuff the cat was already doing. We just happened somebody happened to say, I bet I could wash those off and make coffee.
But would you eat this coffee if you were handed it to you and someone said, hey, these came out of, as Brian Dunham would say, a civet's butthole?
I totally would, because I would love to try. I've heard of Kapalua coffee and how it's supposed to be the most amazing coffee in the universe, and it's just super expensive. I don't know how many.
I would sip it, right?
Come on. It's been washed. It's been roasted. It's been,
it's been cooked.
Know,
it's been cooked. It's been through the ass end of a freaking animal. It's fine.
But won't somebody think about the civets, because the employment rate for the civets is just going to plummet. Because
I've got this one for you, Dunaway. First of all, the perfume industry won't let him, you know, totally go into unemployment. Also, since they don't have to poop out the beans for the coffee makers anymore, that poop can be used to power renewable energy cars. Look soon for the Honda Civic.
Dude, you climbed a mountain and ran 500 miles to get to that joke. Well, that was awesome. Oh,
so,
my
Scott,
gosh.
You think the water you've been drinking hasn't passed through Kevin Costner at some point or another?
Do you think that's air you're breathing? See, look, now we're all back to the Matrix. I see how it works.
How many bug parts are in the air you're breathing right now? Let's
see how deep this rabbit hole goes.
I'll tell you how many.
Rabbit hole.
It goes 10 feet. Windows 10. Oh, that was a bad transition.
It's good enough.
Sure.
Hey, Windows 10 got announced. It didn't come out, but they did put out a technical preview. I've been playing with it. It's fantastic. Mm. I'm a fan. Mm. Love it. Mm. They're doing all the right things, in my opinion. It is yet to remain to be seen how it's actually going to work in practice for tablets and convertible laptops. But the big thing is that they didn't call it Windows 9, because if you're like, wait a minute, isn't Windows 8 the current one? Why is this Windows 10? Well, they made up some story about how Windows 9 was so good they couldn't release it, so they're jumping straight to 10, which is crap.
Yeah.
Lots of people are trying to figure out what the real reason for this is. Deepa Singh on our subreddit submitted the story about Windows 9 not causing problems in certain legacy software that checks for version by just looking for Windows 9 to see if it's Windows 95 or Windows 98. They were saving a bit in old programs. And if you're like, oh, yeah, but those old programs can't be around, programmers are better than that, go to searchcode.net and do a search. You will find current code that still checks for version number by looking for Windows 9 asterisk.
Right, because at the time, I'm just thinking, I don't know if this is true or not, but it seems like this would have just been a really quick and dirty, easy way to do quick searches the way somebody might in iTunes or something. And, you know, it's just a simple string search. And
I don't have to search for Windows 95 or Windows 98. I can just search Windows 9 cutoff, and anything that fits that will work.
And none
of
those,
that's actually the reason or not, I don't know, but it's certainly
it's a good theory.
Yeah.
Does this mean we're going to leapfrog from 19 to 21, Windows 19 to 21 because of Windows 2000?
Probably.
I hope so.
I mean, it could be, but maybe by then they patch it. But those people in 95, they didn't know this. They didn't know there'd be a Windows 10 one day.
It's like the whole Y2K thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Tom, I know you've been covering it a ton this week and you're probably Windows to death, but your actual usage of it is encouraging. And everybody I've heard from is has said this to me, that it feels more like what the half step should have been between 7 and what 8 should have been. And then whatever comes after that is maybe more Metro or less Metro. But the point is that this is that middle space with flattened interface and then kind of a beautiful new design, but not forcing this Metro thing down your throat, getting the start menu back where it belongs. But still having some of those benefits and stuff like that. Is that kind of how it feels?
Yeah, it does. It feels like they are doing the thing that we've seen them do a lot on Xbox, which is listening to the audience, picking the things they think make sense that the audience is upset about and changing those things. So they put back the start menu in a great way. It's not just the old start menu, although it's very familiar. It also has tiles and it works. It makes sense the way the tiles appear and you can customize them and they're live tiles and you can make them live or turn them off and it gives you customization, which is what Windows is about to me, is like, give me a good template and let me tweak it to work well for me. And that's what this does. It puts it back to those options. The nifty thing that it can do that I haven't seen in actual real life is called Continuum, where when you press the start menu in the desktop version of Windows 10, it gives you the start menu. In Continuum, if you, let's say you have a convertible and you pull the keyboard off, it will say, oh, do you want to switch to tablet mode? You say yes. And then from then on, you're in that tiled interface. And if you click the start menu, it will take you to the tiled interface. All your tiled apps from the Windows Store will run full screen, which is better for a tablet. If you're in the desktop mode, those apps from the Windows Store that are tiled, which right now in Windows 8 have to be run full screen, won't run full screen. They'll run in a window the way you want them to on the desktop, which is, to me, that's perfect. It's one operating system that works the way it's supposed to, depending on the form factor it's running on.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like two things were wedged into the same kernel as much as it did before. There's a little more unification there. That's good. I'm stoked. I mean, it's always the every other one with Windows anyway, and this is the every other one, you know? I mean, it's not but whatever.
Right. I loaded it up at work as well, and I'm using it exclusively on my work PC because I'd had no trouble at all. And the only thing I had trouble installing was a Symantec, our Endpoint Protection Manager, will not work on it. But other than that, I haven't had, all my drivers are there. All the software I've tried to run, which is tons, works great. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I've got a bunch of handmade PCs, so I'm a little more leery. I mean, not handmade.
I crocheted them, but they're made of wood.
You know, custom like PCs that I've assembled, and I'm really worried about drivers and stuff.
This is what I do. I hard drives are so inexpensive now. You throw an extra hard drive in there, you load it up on that, and as simple as that. You don't even touch your other OS at all.
Just let it install. Sit back, drink yourself a cup of civet.
That's right. Yep. Nice hot cup of civet. All right. Before we move on, there is some breaking news. Beep 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 beep. This link over here that you guys see in the show notes, I put it in the chat room. That is supposedly an actual shot of Luke Skywalker as...
Oh, wow. That is him.
Yeah, as Jedi Master Skywalker there.
If you go look up pictures of Mark Hamill in Image Search, you will find him with that beard.
Yes.
Right.
So that is definitely what Mark Hamill looks like right now. Whether someone took a picture of Mark Hamill and photoshopped his head onto Alec Guinness's body would be my only question.
See, that's the thing. I think I've seen that expression or that photo that picture came from.
Yeah, it may not be real.
Those hands look much older than I would think. Well, of course, Corvette summer happened, so I guess.
Yeah, but these dudes, listen, this is important to note. He's the same age now as who played Kenobi?
Alec
Guinness was when he did this movie. Same age.
He looks tough.
If you go look that up, same age. I mean,
Star Wars was made in 77, right?
77, yep.
And Alec Guinness was born in 1914.
That makes him...
So he was 63.
63. That, isn't that...
That can't... Mark Hamill can't be 63.
He is. He was 19 in 77. Mm-hmm.
Mark Hamill was born in 1951.
Yeah.
So he'd be... Make him 64.
64 years old. He's actually older.
He's actually a year older.
About that. Put that
in your sheet. Blew my mind, Scott Johnson.
He doesn't look feeble. Like Alec Guinness looks so feeble in Star Wars.
No, he doesn't. Here's why Alec Guinness seems older.
Look like he was.
It's because back then we were kids and everybody looked really old.
That's there's a scene where he's running off screen and he like gets to the edge and then he starts hobbling off. I mean, it's bad.
I mean, he may have had some issues. I don't know. And I think we're living longer and healthier now than we used to. Yeah, so there's some of that.
I think it's a little of both. We probably remember him being older because we were young, but he also probably looked a little older just because of life expectancy.
Yeah. Mark Hamill, you guys.
Mark in Florida found the Alec Guinness pose, and I think I found the Mark Hamill pose.
Nicely done, chat room. Nicely done. Yep. You know what? Even though it's a Photoshop, it still gets
me
excited.
Well done.
Like the idea that Mark Hamill does, like they have him dressed with the beard like that, right? That's for the movie. So he's not going to be in that pose, but he's going to be in something like that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I'm excited that he is that age and that they were about the same age when they made those movies. There's something about that makes this feel kind of cool. And I don't know why exactly. I'm not trying to be ageist here or whatever, but there's something about that makes me excited to see him in the role.
How is that ageist?
I don't know, but he's just not going to be this snot-nosed kid that wants to go to Tashi Station and get power
converters. I hope he is. I hope he's still as whiny as he was.
He won't be.
I just want to see like a short interstitial where he appears on Tatooine out of nowhere. And in Tashi Station, you see a big sign and he's like, 2 power converters.
please get a power converter. It would be the biggest shark jump in the history of ever. We'd all love it, but it would be super jumpy sharky. Hey, before we take a break, or not take a break, but before we talk about our pop quiz, which is kind of a break in a weird way, Tom, tell us about this month's tech history book, because people want to get it.
Yeah, so all 12 months are now covered in our Amazon Kindle singles. If you completionists have been waiting for this, you've got them all now. Volumes 1 through 12 are out with Tech History October. You can get it at tommerrittbooks.com. It's just like all the others. Got great illustrations by Scott in there, and it covers 3 or 4 events, sometimes more, that happened on every day in October. So get up to speed, find out what happened in tech history. Really interesting October, because it's filled with like the entire history, the life cycle of Nintendo happens in October. And Apple, because they used to do iPod announcements and then changed to doing iPad announcements, and then more recently have done iPhone announcements. There's like a whole like life cycle of Apple announcements in October too.
Yeah, which is cool. So do check that out, and some exciting news about that as a compilation coming up soon. We'll let you know right here on Current Geek.
America scores and wins.
Ooh, that sound and that song can only mean one thing. It's time for the pop quiz, and this is a lot of people's favorite segment of the show. We've got pop quizzes for both of you. You've both been on the show before. However, you've not done these quizzes. Let's start with you, Dunaway. You ready for yours?
Yes, please. I want to fail first.
Guess what your category is.
I have no idea.
Minority Report trivia.
Oh, my God.
Oh, crap.
Yeah.
I hate you so much.
Oh, here
I'm
going to
go study the Johnny Mnemonic page right now.
No, don't worry. You're good. I promise you're covered on that. Okay. Minority Report trivia begins with this question. Who composed... Oh, and Tom, by the way, will judge your questions. You'll get a... And if you get it right, the ding, the buzz. If you don't, you know the drill. Here you go. Okay. Who composed and conducted the score for Minority Report?
Steven Spielberg. He thought he could do it all.
You are wrong. It's John Williams. That is an easy one. Who does Spielberg always work with?
I thought we were going for funny, not correct.
No, it's correct is what you want.
All right, fine, okay.
Unless Tom changes it.
Going for funny and not correct gets you nothing.
All right. Next question. How old was Danny Whitwer, when his father was murdered?
He was 23.
15 is the correct answer. 15. Oh. What is the name of John Anderton's ex-wife in this movie?
Miss Anderton's.
Lara is the correct answer. You got that one wrong. Hey, at least you're quick. That's what I like. What are the precogs named after?
Great master painters, Michelangelo and Leonardo. No, I can't remember.
Oh, sorry. Oh, not right. It is the writers of mystery novels. They were different.
You actually get a technical half point because the ding went off.
Yeah, I screwed that up.
nice, Tom.
Thank you.
What are the names of the three precogs?
Oh, my God. If I don't know the other part, Sally and the Wonder Twins.
Agatha. After Agatha Christie, Arthur, named after Arthur Conan Doyle, and Dashiell, named after Dashiell Hammett.
Hammett.
Dashiell.
Oh, he spelled it wrong.
Hammett.
All right, well, you got that one wrong. Who did the precogs predict that John Anderton was going to kill?
The I can't remember the guy's name. The sex offender, the guy who murdered his son.
Leo Crow would be his proper name.
Leo Crow.
Yeah, but I think you guess you're right. He wasn't a sex offender,
though. By the way, in the book, they're Donna and Mike. So.
He seemed like a...
He pretended like he was one.
70s sitcom parents.
Totally. All right. Next question. You got two more.
Oh, my God.
Who played director Lamar Burgess in the movie?
Who played director?
No. Who played? Yeah. Director of the department.
Oh, okay.
Director
of the film. I actually know that one. Lars Ulrich. I don't know.
Yes. The drummer from Metallica. The Max von Sydow is the correct answer.
Ah, that's right.
He'll be in Star Wars.
Yeah, he will be. If they don't Photoshop him in there first. And then final question, what is the fundamental flaw in the pre-crime system, according to the film?
That Spielberg was allowed to direct this piece of stuff.
Nope, it is. If someone knows their future, they can change it. And
point of view, Brian is correct, so we'll get a quarter point for that.
All right, that's good. Brian, Ibbett, your category is Survivor trivia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can do this because you love Survivor,
this.
Right?
I do like this.
Not the band, the show.
Oh, I was going to ask. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, shoot. Yeah. All right.
All right. I know now there's trouble. All right. So let me get you up
I
here
can't
on screen.
Hold back. Dang it. That was going to be my first answer.
Yeah.
Tiger. The tiger's eye.
Yeah, the tiger's eye. All right. So here's your crap. I lost your thing here. There it is. All right. Here we go. First question. Where did the first season of Survivor take place?
It was an island chain called, crap.
Borneo is the correct answer. Oh, yeah, crap is not the correct answer. Who is the host of Survivor's famous, or sorry, who is the host of Survivor famous for saying, quote, another or another?
What?
Yeah. Oh, right.
Another is what he wrote.
Can you please repeat the question?
Who is the host of Survivor famous for saying, quote, another?
Which host?
All right. Are you looking for Jeff Probst?
You are indeed looking for Jeff Probst. Okay. I don't know where that I might. You
I'm
know
only
what?
Answering the first five words of that question because I don't right. understand the last three.
Hey, blame Ice Worm. I don't know what the hell he did there. That was weird.
Homie.
Who was the winner of the second season of Survivor?
Oh, it was Tina something hey. From Africa.
Tina from Africa.
Well, no, the second season took place in. Oh no, the second one took place in Australia. It was Tina. Can't remember her last name.
Tom, he's right about the first name, but doesn't know the last. Where was judge it? Close judge enough. It.
This is a half point.
All right, so that means here. Watch, we do this.
You got a half point.
There, it's a ding and a nice. It's a ding and a buzz at the same time. Tina Wesson is the name. Tina Wesson.
Wesson. Sure. She has Wessonality.
Yeah. Right. Next up, what is the slogan for Survivor?
Out, let's see. It is outwit, outplay, outlast.
You are correct. Nicely done. I didn't know that. I don't watch it, so maybe that's why I don't. Next up, what season has contestants competing in Vanuatu?
Vanuatu?
Vanuatu. I don't know how you say it.
Oh, wow. What you're correcting season? The like questions?
What, like, are you looking for a season number?
Yeah.
Could this be more unfair?
Let's see. 13.
13?
I have no idea.
9 is the correct answer.
9.
Quarter point for knowing how to pronounce Vanuatu.
I knew he was going to do it.
Can I get a point for feeling like this is unfair?
Yeah, sure.
There you go. Have a point. Including the current season of San Juan del Sur, how many seasons of the show have there been? Oh my gosh, I had no idea.
Because they do 2 seasons a year, basically. Yeah. I think it's like 26.
I worked at Half Price Books when the show went on the air, just so you know.
Oh, wow, weird, wow. Right? Okay, 29, but you're so 29. Close. 26 is close. All right. Richard Hatch was sentenced to how many months in prison for tax evasion?
What? Not the Apollo Richard Hatch.
Not Richard Hatch. That would be how many years is Richard Hatch?
That naked guy from the first season.
Yeah.
Not enough would be my answer.
That's a pretty good one, and I would normally give you a ding, but it's 51 months. 51.
Oh, no, Brian was correct. Not enough.
Yeah, not enough.
51 months. What is he, like an infant? What are you measuring him by months by for? What is that?
That is weird, isn't it? Why not say... Yeah,
4 years and 3 months. Yeah,
that's weird. Final question. What was the title for Survivor? I'm sorry. What was the title for season 20 of Survivor?
Season 20. Let's say that was one of their fans versus favorites.
You seasons. Are incorrect. Oh. It was heroes versus villains.
Yeah.
Heroes and villains. All right. That is how it went. That is how it's done. Tom Merritt will now add up the points and tell us who won. Yeah, you did all right. All right. What do you say, Tom? How'd they do?
Brian Dunaway came in with a very respectable 1.75 points.
Which is what it deserved.
Yeah. Would have been 0.75 before his request. And then Brian Hibbett finished up with 3.5.
Yeah, way to go,
my
Brian
first
Hibbett.
Win on this thing.
That's
now
right.
I can retire. You know, take that, Patrick.
You know what you get for that?
Barry.
Jill.
You get one of those. Congratulations.
Jill.
Way to go. All right, that means time for this.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
All right, this used to be a show. Now it's a freaking segment, and it's called Forecast, and it's where we try to predict the future in sometimes nerdy and geeky ways. I don't know which one we're going for here. Are we doing this main one, do you think? What is this main one here? All right.
Brian
main
wrote
one's
that.
Kind of a joke.
I like it, though. In 2020...
But Scott has a story.
I do have a story. In 2020, says Tom, the Big Ben Bell Tower...
No, that's not me.
This isn't you?
don't blame that bomb on me.
Is this Dunaway's?
This is Dunaway.
Okay, all right. Oh. That's going to be great then. We'll be fitted for Apple's latest attempt to go big and get bent. Ironically, hindsight will be very poor that year. All right. I have to add
get
to
it because it's 2020.
No,
get
I
it?
Totally get it. I put a big dent in my new iPhone 6. I didn't bend it. My iPhone is not bent. It's dented. Dent. I had a dent, not a bent. I ran into a table at night with the lights off and put a big giant dent in my
phone. The question
phone.
Is, why are you walking around with the lights off?
I don't know. My and wife asked the same question.
Yeah. Don't you know that the iPhone is used as a flashlight? You hold it up as you walk through the house.
I should have done that. If I would, and I didn't know the table was there. It was in a place in the house where there's normally nothing. Apparently, Kim's brother-in-law put it there while I wasn't looking. And I walked through, smacked that thing.
A whole table?
Yes. And I told Kim, I said, Kim, why was this table in here? She goes, don't blame me for you being clumsy and running into that thing. I said, but the table wasn't there before. And she goes, yes, but your knowledge of how lights work was.
There was a point in time when this happened, brilliant. Like a little brief second where you're thinking, I can totally blame Kim's brother-in-law for this.
Yeah, I totally could. I tried. I gave him my best. But
surprise table.
Who puts on table?
My phone is, so it's currently got this dent and therefore a little bit of a weird bend on the back, and it's just pissing me off. It still works. Everything's fine. The case protected it, sort of. So
I say embrace the dent.
I predict by 2018 that Apple will actually come out with a bent phone.
You think that'll just be on purpose?
I think you're just ahead of the curve.
All right.
I think all this clamor that's going on the internet of people wanting the phones to bend, I think they're listening.
All right. Well,
I think you have a phone named Harvey.
Oh, see? Look at that. And also, get bent is a great... No, get dent is a great Harvey Dent thing.
Dent.
So here's this. There's a real one here. Tom actually had this in last week, and I really wanted to get to it. In 2024, he says, Apple will be dealing with a declining smartphone sales as people will have moved on to as-of-yet-to-be-introduced form factors that the company did not anticipate. Tom, can you explain... A little more about that.
Yeah, so my thinking here is that Apple benefited by jumping on the touchscreen smartphone at a time when other companies were sort of circling around it. They hadn't solved multi-touch, and Apple has been riding that wave since. Because if you look at it, Apple TV is a hobby. The iPad is, you know, a valid form factor, but essentially the same technology that they developed for the iPhone. And the watch is, you know, an interesting interface, but still more of the same.
Yeah.
I feel like somebody out there, the next innovative genius is going to come up with something new and unanticipated that none of us thought about, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be like, oh, that's now the way to interact. And Apple's going to be struggling because smartphone sales will be declining the way that PC sales are declining right now because smartphones are where it's at. Everybody's using smartphones for things that they used to use laptops for. Not geeks. Geeks are still using laptops and desktops in great numbers and for great reasons. But your average person who just wants a little email and maybe surf the web, all they need is a phone, especially when those phones are 5-6 inches large.
So the phone, you think the watch is not it. That's a stopgap kind of weird.
No, I don't think that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not the
watch
answer.
Is something that, you know, you're going to have to convince people to wear. People don't wear watches as much anymore. Mm. And when they wear them as status symbols, which is why Apple's going with the gold watch, because they want to cover that status symbol base. This is going to be something where people go, oh, yes, this is definitely the way multi-touch was. This makes it easy to interact now.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what it is.
Let's take it around the horn here. Dunaway, do you have a prediction as to what that interface may be? Or is it just good enough to know that these guys don't see it coming?
Right. I think the interface, I don't think we'll see a big direction change on that, because I think it is what it is. I think what's going to happen is, like, the status symbol we're going with, I think we're going a little more retro, and eventually they're going to have a telescoping antenna. They're going to put it back on the iPhone. Like those, like the old Motorola's.
Remember
the
telescoping
antenna? I had one on my Samsung phone for Sprint back in 99. Right. I don't think it did anything.
Yeah. Right. It was a hollow piece of plastic, right? It's like
I think it did, because I would stick that in my mouth and I would get a headache after a couple of minutes. So I'm thinking
it was. What the heck, dude? For real? You really did that.
You were shoving it into your soft palate. That's why.
Right.
You know that thing's been inside the back of a cat, don't you?
Right.
I hope so.
That's how you get the best tasting antennas man can buy. No, but you really did test it that way? Like, put it in your mouth and got a headache?
Oh, no, I didn't test it, but I have been stupid enough to sit there and be distracted and sit there with the antenna. Like, chewing on a pen or whatever.
You've never put the tip of your Cintiq pen in your mouth?
No, I've done that, but I've never put a freaking device with a bunch of radios in it emitting various transmissions into my mouth.
What do you think sends signals to your
crotch?
Lick a 9-volt battery, Scott?
Well, that's a good point. But the phone, there's nothing electrical happening in the pen. The pen doesn't have any battery or any kind of anything.
No, it doesn't.
That's some weird tech where it just, I don't know how it works.
But you're fine with sticking a phone in your front pocket next to your nuts, but you're not going to stick an antenna in your mouth. Okay, whatever.
All right, fair enough.
I like what this prediction has devolved into.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Thanks, Tom, for giving us a
sake. Dunaway, in the course of this show, has said, I don't care that it comes out of the civet's butt, and, so having it next to your nutsack's the same as having it next to your mouth.
Totally.
These are all very capturable moments on the show. Mm. So, Ice Worm? Give it a shot.
Teachable
buddy.
Moments.
That's right. We got an email, which is always a teachable moment from a listener before we close out of here. Sarah sent this in and says this: the only way forward I can see is for Kirk to appear in the upcoming Star Trek films is this. Kirk is a Time Lord. You're welcome, Mr. Abrams. Also up for discussion. Just who would you cast to be Kirk if that were the case? Sarah. I think basically she's saying turn Star Trek into a Doctor Who.
Well, wait. The second question doesn't make any sense.
That's what I say. Kirk
would you cast to be Kirk?
Well, William Shatner. That's the whole reason we're having this conversation.
Yeah. Last week it was all about Shatner's. Yeah. It would have to be Shatner. That's the whole point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. No.
So if we did, let's say Shatner died halfway through filming or something and we had to replace him. And we had to roll back.
You just need a big piece of fried dough. You'd be fine.
So you think we would just CG generate it?
Ow.
I'm sorry, that was terrible. I was describing a scone. I should have
replaced
said scone.
It with a scone, I know.
That's more light and fluffy.
I would love to see that.
The answer you're looking for, before you even get to the question, the answer you're looking for is Val Kilmer.
Oh, Val Kilmer, that's it.
It's fry bread. That's all you need.
Yeah. All right. The point being that if we were to do this at all, then yes, make him a Time Lord, but it'd have to be Shatner. I can see what you're saying. But I am all about them getting away from A, familiar storylines that we've already told and retold, and B, getting away from time travel. If they can do those two things in the next one, I'll be super happy.
More time travel. More time travel.
Ugh. Tom likes time travel in his movies.
Right. I'm okay with time travel because it gives me a lot of stuff to stand on and go, this is stupid. It's stupid too.
Yeah.
And but
you're
I'm
just
okay
mad
with
that.
That
time travel is not often done well.
Mm. Exactly.
Think of 12 Monkeys. Think of Terminator.
Yeah. Yeah. But then again, here, I know how you make the perfect movie for Dunaway. You put in some time travel, you put some wooden balls in there, and you make a lot of rain, and then you've got your perfect film for Dunaway.
Perfect.
And Pierce Stormare cutting your eyeballs out.
Exactly. Filmsock.com for more. All right. Well, there's your email. If you'd like to send us an email, you sure can out there, everybody. Send it to currentgeek@gmail.com. We are happy to have them on the show. That is going to do it for us. Oh, man. What a great episode. You guys are great. It's always fun hanging out.
I love this. I love being on the show.
Yeah, it's fun. It's old pals doing stuff they like to do and shooting the schmoo around the table.
Shooting the schmoo.
Oh, remember the Saturday morning cartoon about the schmoo?
Ah, the schmoo.
All right.
Yeah. Remember the Civic Cat drops a schmoo in a cup and you guys drink it? Remember that? Brilliant. Let's go around and talk about what people are up to so people can find out more about them. So, Brian Ibbett, where can people find you and what you're doing?
People can find 10 years of freaking Coverville at freakingcoverville.com. Don't listen the first 2 years. Trust me.
They're good. That's when I heard it. I loved it.
Yeah, but if you're familiar with the newer stuff, you really don't want to hear that old stuff. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, all right. So Coverville TMS, Mondays through Thursdays, twice a day on Thursdays with my buddy here, Scott Johnson, and with both my buddies here, Scott Johnson and Brian Dunaway, Film Sack, on Sundays. Yeah. And Tom, I just like hanging out with Tom and eating ice cream any chance I get.
Yeah. Me too.
I like that.
Can't wait for our ice cream social.
Speaking of Film Sack, this weekend, Bloodsport is our film.
Yes.
Very excited about that. Get some more Van Damme up in here. Brian Dunaway, Coverville on Twitter, everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Brian Dunaway, how about you? What's going on?
Comics Coast to Coast. Go there, comicscoasttocoast.com. Follow me at the Brian Dunaway. Also, yeah, like you guys said, do the Film Sack. And I've been kind of ramping up my YouTube channel since I've got a little extra free time.
YouTube.
You know what I mean?
What's YouTube?
That's YouTube.
My YouTube. It's the knockoff brand.
That's what an Ewok says.
Right? YouTube.
My ISP blocks that site.
An Ewok says. He's right.
YouTube. Eat your mama.
YouTube.
And YouTube.
YouTube.
So yes, YouTube.com / The Brian Dunaway. I've been working on my YouTube channel.
Yeah. Well, all right, good, perfect. Thank you both for being here. Mr. Merritt, anything that you want to mention before we go?
You know, we already mentioned the tech history single, but I just want to point out that at TomMerrittBooks.com, I have other things as well. If you're interested in science fiction, Lot Beta is a title that I'm not terribly embarrassed about if you wanted to read it. I also have a sort of young adult noir detective story involving my dogs as crime solvers, and there's some other books there too. So if you're feeling experimental, looking for something new to read, check out TomMerrittBooks.com. There's ebook versions, print versions, and even free PDFs.
It's called I Was Mockingjay in the Maze While I Was Running It Before Twilight. There you go. There's your young adult.
Love that.
Lot Beta also features one of my favorite things I ever drew, which is the cover for that book.
It is an amazing cover. Yeah. I love that cover.
One of my favorite things. So you get a little something extra there if you care about covers. I would push people toward the Boop Show, B-O-O-P. It's a video game podcast, news you can use about video games every Monday and Thursday. I changed the dates. It's a half hour show. It's a nice, easy, digestible thing. Catch that soon, or I guess very next episode soon. We already got 20 up there. Just go to frogpants.com/boop. That's going to do it for us. Current Geek on Twitter. You can also find us at currentgeek.com, currentgeek.reddit.com. And again, our email address is currentgeek@gmail.com. It's going to do it for us. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye. I got to go catch my civet.
Just follow the trail.
Just a little roundabout, little civet poop trail is what you're talking about there.
Yep. Just look for the little trail of coffee.
Coffee, coffee, coffee. Oh, that's not bean. That's not a coffee.
I called an Uber and it ended up being a Honda Civet.
Hi, I'm Jeannie, and we're exploring some of the history of Westeros in Game of Thrones. Night gathers, and now my watch begins. Thus starts the oath for the Night's Watch, an all-male military order that holds and guards the wall. It consists of three groups. The rangers who fight, defend the wall, and patrol the haunted forest. The builders who maintain the wall and the castles. And the stewards who support and feed the members of the watch. In taking the oath, recruits agree to forsake marriage, family, and property. Legends say the Night's Watch was founded 8,000 years prior to current events. Their mission is to protect the Seven Kingdoms from threats north of the kingdom's northernmost border, including White Walkers, wildlings, and giants. In joining, the men forsake marriage, families, and property. In exchange, they receive a new start. All past transgressions are forgiven, but desertion is punishable by death. The watch was once very highly regarded, their ranks filled by volunteers of noble families. Serving was seen as a sign of devotion to the protection of the realm. By the time of Robert Baratheon's reign, the watch had lost its prestige. At this point, the realm largely ignores them, and it's filled with outcasts and criminals. The castles they built are largely abandoned and have fallen into disrepair. Its membership is slowly dwindling every year. But things seem to be awakening north of the wall. Are they prepared to handle the threat? You can reach me with any questions or requests about the people and places in Westeros at TyrionsLanding.com or TyrionsLanding on Gmail and Twitter. The music used is by Kevin MacLeod.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we take a look at a new law signed into effect in California last month and determine whether it could make cell phones more secure than ever. California lawmakers enacted a new law which forces all smartphone manufacturers to provide automatically enabled kill switch technology on all phones sold after July 1st, 2015. This kill switch technology is like the activation lock on Apple products. These kill switches enable an owner of a phone to remotely lock down and brick the phones, erasing all data and making the phone unusable. The primary goal of this is to deter theft, as upwards of 70% of all robbery and theft crimes in bigger cities like San Francisco are related to smartphones. The resale market is so lucrative on these products, and they have become so ubiquitous that it should come as no surprise that this is the latest consumer product to get a lot of attention from thieves. The early results speak for themselves, as iPhone theft in places like New York City have dropped 17-20% following the addition of the automatic activation lock feature. The most important part of the new law is that phones must have this kill switch functionality automatically enabled upon purchase, even if the option to opt out is provided. If you've purchased an iPhone 6 recently, you've already seen this change in action. Most consumers will not take the time to opt out, which means an extra layer of security will be present on almost all phones on the market in California within a year or two. That should slow down the rate of violent crime for this particular type of consumer product. California is the biggest market in the country, so what happens there will likely also cause all phone manufacturers to adopt these standards nationwide. Much like the Delaware data destruction law covered a couple weeks ago on this segment, this is the type of pro-consumer law that benefits us all. Kudos to California for helping advance this safety technology in the phone field. The bottom line is, less robberies and thefts mean a more secure society, and everybody wins in that scenario. That's a rarity in lawmaking, so enjoy it for this week. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions as segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
Hey guys, welcome to Sweet Kicks with Bricks. I'm your host, Barry Ricks, and we have another Kickstarter highlight today. Today is Adventures of Pip by TikTok Games, and I have the team with me. How's it going, guys?
Woo, good. How you doing?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Yeah, we're super excited to be on your show.
Awesome. Well, why don't you you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your team?
Great. You want to start?
I'm Mark Gomez. I'm the creative director at TikTok Games, and I'm also the designer of Adventures of Pip.
And he also worked on Contra 4, and he worked on Boy and Club, and he's been, like, on every Game Boy Advance to, like, DS title that WayForward ever launched. He's awesome.
Nice.
I'm Sharif Morris. I'm the executive producer of Adventures of Pip, and I'm super excited to be on your show.
Oh, I'm super excited to have you guys here. That's awesome. Okay. So, thanks. Adventures of Pip, it looks awesome. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about the game and what they can expect from it?
Well, I'd say the high-end aspect that they should see from the game is that you start off as a single pixel, and as you defeat enemies, you'll absorb their pixels and become a higher resolution. And the higher your resolution, the more different abilities you'll have, and that's the basic premise of our game.
Yeah, but, you know, also to add on what Mark is saying is, you know, the evolution is really, really cool, but the de-evolution is also super important because as you evolve, you gain certain skills, but you also lose certain advantages. Like, you know, single pixel Pip can fit in, like, small places. And, like, super agile Pip is, like, super light so he can wall jump. But
Spider-Man type.
Totally.
Yeah. Spider-Man,
yeah. But, like, heavy Pip, he's bulky. He could push, like, heavy blocks, and he could break bricks with his sword. He could wield a sword because he's super buff. But, you know, he loses a lot of that agility. So, you know, there's always a trade-off. And the cool thing about it, I think, is, like, this de-evolution blast that you have to do. Like, it's, like, almost a small area effect, like, attack that you get to do. But it discharges all your pixels, too, and it's really central to the gameplay.
It's a kind of strategy puzzle that you have to figure out as you go through your adventures. Do I want to stay at this higher resolution? Do I want to release my pixels to get to this tight area? And that ties in back to our story, whereas depending on – it doesn't matter what resolution you are. You're always important, and that's our overall moral that we're trying to teach.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. I mean, and you could see a lot of that in the video that you guys put together for your Kickstarter is, yeah, you have to – I really liked that concept where you could break down and build yourself up depending on how you need to solve the problem at hand, and yeah, how each person is, you know, each level of your person is important in different ways. And I really like that. I think that's cool.
Yeah, it ties into our gameplay and into our story. So it's something that really drew people in when
also like Twitch gameplay too. I think like while we're watching people play at PAX Villager, and then they have to like quickly de-evolve, wall jump, and then hit something, then re-evolve, and then hit something again after they re-evolve in order to break the bricks. It was like really, really crazy fun to watch. But yeah, the demo, like we've been sending it around, and like a lot of people are doing like previews of it. So it's really awesome. If you could get your hands on it, play it. It's cool.
Yeah, definitely. So with the game, what were maybe some of the inspirations that you grabbed from to create this game?
I mean, as far as old school gaming, we both love a lot of Zelda, Mario. We've been studying a lot of platforms to make sure that we got our controls really tight in this game. I mean, there, outside of games, I'd say for me, it'd be Legos.
That's awesome.
That, one thing that's inspiring to me, especially how the gameplay came to be, is because I grew up in playing Atari games and seeing the evolution of characters based on pixel counts. So it's not necessarily an evolution of gaming, but more an evolution of character development.
It's almost like watching his career too. Like, I mean, Mark was pretty much doing like Game Boy Advance art at WayForward in the early stages, and he just kept on, you know, as he was working on different platforms, you know, the art kept on
evolving.
It really did. Like when he was art directing Boy and His Blob, I mean, it was all traditional animation. It's all hand drawn animation that he was directing that, and that game looks unbelievable. So,
but it is very nice to see how different things can be when you add more resolution to characters, and how gaming has evolved from, you know, Pong to what it is today, and what different things you gain. But at the same time, I wanted to see what do you lose from those earlier aspects of gaming. So,
and we assembled like an all-star cast to kind of help us get this game done. I mean, we got everyone from Elazar, who's like doing DuckTales remastered animations, Jeff Luke helping with the level designing. He was on Shantae, Half Genie Hero, Drawn to Life. Let's see, we got,
got a lot of help from Shovel Knight team.
Shovel Knight team too. And
cool.
Yeah, I said Half Genie Hero, but it was the other one, the one that they just submitted. Half Genie Hero is still in production, so.
No, that's really cool. It's awesome that a lot of people are getting behind this. So what platforms are you hoping to get this out onto?
Everything. I mean, really, we want to be for everyone. We don't want to – we know that everybody kind of has their own favorite platform, so we do want everyone to play it. Right now, we are targeting Steam first and Wii U. And then our first stretch goals are
Xbox and PSN.
Yeah, thanks. And but we do want to try to get to 3DS too. I think the Nintendo guys are actually going to be here on the 29th. We're so freaking excited about that.
Nice.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah, we're talking about potentially doing 3DS. So those will be in stretch goals. But man, like, you know, we want to do them so bad. So
yeah, no, that's awesome. And as of right now, when we're recording this, you guys are like at the very like 90-something%, and you guys still have 10 days to go as of when we're recording this. And so it looks like you guys are going to get funded, and this game's going to get fully made. And so that's exciting.
Yeah. I mean, we're really excited about that. I think Mark wanted to say something. I just like jumped in. I'm sorry.
I mean, I feel like we're definitely going to get funded. I really want to hit our stretch goals, and I really want to get a big audience behind this. So, you know, as much as we can have the word spread, you know, tweet it, Facebook it, share the links, anything that
tell everyone. But, you know, don't wait until like the last few days. Definitely try to get in now while, you know, the gettings are good. I mean, we're definitely going to do stuff for the early adopters, you know, everybody who got in on the Kickstarter is going to have a special gift. You know, it's like
their names in the credits.
Their names are going to be in the credits, but they're also going to have like an early adopter pin. But and hopefully maybe we'll try to do something else depending on how well we do in the Kickstarter. So
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So when this interview comes out live to all you listeners, you will still have time. The Kickstarter will still be going, so definitely go to Kickstarter.com and check out Adventures of Pip, and so that you can get and get a copy of this game. Go back it. It's an awesome project. So after the game is funded on Kickstarter, do you guys have any plans of maybe? I know that some Kickstarters, they do a little funding on their own personal website after that, but the Kickstarter people still have their perks that they get, but you still allow people to get in on it. Are you guys going to have anything like that?
We've heard from other developers on what they've done after their Kickstarters ended. It's like through PayPal or through Indiegogo, but I don't think we've had any solidified plans, but we'll definitely make a way for other people to continue back into the game.
Yeah, we'll definitely put a PayPal up on the Kickstarter for sure after we fund. But the other piece has kind of been, we've been just talking about what do we do next.
That's
cool. It's all about doing the game. Right now it's all game.
Yeah. So where can people find out more about the game and where can they get the information that they want?
The short link we have is www.tiktokgames.com/KS, and I'll link you straight to our Kickstarter. If not, go to Kickstarter and type Adventures of Pip, and you'll find our game.
Yeah, there's also stuff on our website, www.tiktokgames.com. Adventures of Pip shows up in the front page. Honestly, we've been so slammed with just doing Kickstarter stuff that we haven't really updated in a little while, but we will soon. And then if you guys look at also our Twitter feed, we're constantly taking pictures of people working on the game and updating what's going on in the studio. So take a look at that as well. So we'll have a lot of different avenues. Add us on Facebook, add us on Twitter, look at our website, or just go to the Kickstarter.
Yeah. And what's your guys' Twitter handle?
At TikTok Games, TikTok Games.
Just simple as that. Nice and easy. Well, thanks guys for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, Barry.
Yeah, and everyone go check out their Kickstarter. It's going to be an awesome game. I wouldn't be having it on the show if it wasn't awesome, and you wouldn't be listening if you didn't want to back a Kickstarter. So that's it for Sweet Kicks with Bricks. I'm Barry Ricks, and don't forget that you could also follow me on Twitter at Bricks2312. And also, if you care about the other things I talk about, I have my podcast, The Closet Geek. And don't forget to listen to The Final Score, which you're listening to right now, and every week, and listen to Sweet Kicks with Bricks at the end of that. And thanks, guys, for joining me today. It was really awesome.
Thank you, Barry. You.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.